Blog Talk Radio.
Excuse me, yes sir, I understand, but do you actually have the word yes in your vocabulary?
I guess it started when I was a kid. If you said I couldn't do it, I did. Always had a stubborn streak, put a wall in front of me, and I'll find a way to get around it. There was a friend who said I'd never make the team. A lot of small town talk had said I'd never leave. Oh, and you know who you are. You all played a part in pushing me on to my dream. Told me no, pack it up and get back home. It kept me going, knowing I would prove them wrong. Yeah, I knew it all along. Without them, I'd have given up a long time ago. And so, I want to thank everyone who ever told me. My music for a man behind the desk. He said, sorry, what you got? I just don't get. Oh, but here I am today, standing on this stage, and I wonder even now if he gets it. Yeah, I wanna thank everyone who ever told me no. Pack it up and get back home. It kept me going, knowing I would prove them wrong. Yeah, I knew it all along. Without them, I'd have given up a long time ago. And so, I want to thank everyone who ever told me no.
Back to you on that, son. Just keep trying. You know, I'm not sure that you actually look like a star.
Ladies and gentlemen, I just want to thank everyone who told me no. This is Off the Chain. I am your host, Yvonne Mason, and I do want to thank everyone that told me no. From the earliest grades in school to the last grade in high school and all in between, all of the people that told me no, you're too stupid, you don't know math, you don't know how to write, your artwork is less than stellar. Your imagination is too morbid for anybody. You're too short. You're too old. That's just some of the stuff. So, ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you something. I am one of the most successful people that I know, and I am proud of it. And those that know me and that know you, if you ask them, they'll tell you. I am a writer. I am an artist. I am a radio show host. I have my own signature design collection. I am a photographer. And I'm an all-around good person. And I help other people succeed. So you don't get any more successful than that. And the reason I say all that, not to be a braggart, but I am proud of myself. I graduated at the age of 54 with a 3.50 in college with a criminal justice degree, became a bounty hunter with my mother and my sister and some friends going, "What? You're too short, you're too old, and they'll beat you up." Okay, I don't think so. So, yeah, and I haven't been in school since 1969 when I graduated from high school with teachers saying, "Yvonne, you're not smart enough." Really? Tell me that now, people, because I am successful, because I'm a dreamer. And I say that to say this. This radio show was a dream. It was a 5-year dream. I am a patient person. I didn't start publishing until I was in my late 50s, early 60s. So I'm a patient person. I wait on things to come. This show alone, just Blog Talk Radio, because of the listeners and the guests that keep coming back, like my guest tonight, author Ann B. Keller, who's been a friend of mine forever. We are at 27,168 listeners, ladies and gentlemen, just on this show, and it is barely a year old.
Wow.
Yes.
Impressive.
Very. And our biggest supporters on this show are the people down in Australia. I love my Aussie friends. They're marvelous because they're beating out the ghetto USA 100-1. So come on, guys, support me. Well, when you take this show and add all the podcasts I put it up on.
Yep.
Ann, are you sitting down?
Okay.
This show is at 39,838 listeners.
Oh, you're getting close. Getting real close. Oh, wow.
Yes.
My gosh.
So yes, I just want to thank everyone that told me no. I just want to thank everybody that said, "Yvonne, you can't do it, and these are the excuses why." And it took me until I was 30 years old to understand, you know what? I kind of like me the way I am. And if the rest of the world doesn't, that is not on me, that is on them, because I am successful any way I turn around. So with that, we start our show with my friend Ann B. Keller, who is an author, among other things. She,
yep,
say hi, Ann. Yeah, among other
Hello.
Things.
How is everybody?
She has been writing novels and screenplays for over 40 years. She is a veteran of the stage.
I'm coming up on 50, madam.
There, see, this is an old, you got to update me. She has
on August 16th, I will have been writing since, I was age 12. I'm going to turn 62, so yes, ma'am, 50 years.
Oh, my Lord. See, ladies and gentlemen, she is singing and starring in the lead role of the tomboyish Princess Winifred in Once Upon a Mattress, gained her an invitation to audition for the Metropolitan Opera in New York. Sadly, she didn't do it. I wish she had, because then I could have said, I could have known her when. She has received the National Thespian Award and has appeared in numerous additional theater productions in New York, Michigan, and Maryland, including the admirable Crichton, The Crucible, and The Pajama Game. Now, when Anne isn't writing and laughing at me because she thinks I'm hysterically funny, she enjoys bringing the gift of music to all within the sound of her clear, bell-like soprano. And this woman has a voice, ladies and gentlemen. She has a voice. And her sons do, too. Her sons are magnificent. Anne lives in the western suburbs of Cleveland, Ohio, with all three of her boys. I am so glad you're back.
Thank you. Thank you for having me back. This is great.
Well, we always have fun, and the hour flies by. And when I say Anne, we're running out of time. I'm here. Let's just tell the folks a little bit about how we met. We've never met in person, ladies and gentlemen, but we don't have
to. No, we
haven't.
Because
it is odd. You got to come to paradise and visit.
I would love to, especially after this morning.
Yeah, uh-oh. What happened this morning?
Yeah, we had a tornado that came through. So, yeah, it was an exciting day.
Oh, Well, we just have hurricanes.
You have hurricanes down there. We had a tornado this morning, lost power and internet about 7 times that I know of. So, yeah, it was right interesting.
It's too late in the year for tornadoes. Tornadoes are in the spring. We are in the middle of summer, almost fall. I know God's got a sense of humor.
Probably. Yep.
So, ladies and gentlemen, Ann and I have known each other since, I want to say, 2008, maybe.
Been a long time. Yes. Yeah, a long time.
Because you were part of the original crowd that Mr. Vern Firestone decided he was going to screw over. So, ladies and gentlemen, what happened is there were a group of us. It was Ann and myself, the wonderful Andrea Dean Van Skoyek, Deborah Simpson, who writes beautiful, beautiful poetry and owns a spiritualist shop and is a spiritualist and a tarot card reader, a horror author, Tom Futrell, another author, Louise Aveni, a children's author, Fran Ornstein, who's been on the show before. That's the 8 that I can think of. I'm sure there were a couple of more of us, but he screwed us all over. So when he screwed us all over, we just circled the wagons, and here we are today, all still tighter than Dick's hat band.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're very, very strong as a group, even after all these years.
Yeah, and what we did is we blew that glass ceiling off of indie publishing, because at that time, indie publishing was a no-no. And we just blew the ceiling.
Yep. Things have changed a little bit since then.
So we just want to tell everybody, thank you for telling us no. Right?
That's right. I like that song. That was really, really catchy.
Is that from one
of your new musicians?
No, this is I can't remember the author's name, but I was going through some of my old CDs that I have, and I said, I want to play this song because I want to see what it is. Well, when I played it, I went, oh, that is my theme song. Ladies and gentlemen, that one is going on the playlist because it speaks to us on so many levels.
Definitely. Yep.
I do like it. So have the boys been singing any lately, or are they going in a different direction?
No, they have not been singing in the area. The Keller brothers disbanded about 4 years ago. I mean, they're still brothers. They're still together. John doesn't sing that much. Unfortunately, he was pushed and pushed to sing. You know, do me a favor, do this for me. Do me a favor, do this for me. And he got burned out doing favors for people. So now he doesn't sing very much. But when he does sing, oh, my gosh, he just is really impressive. And then George is still singing opera, and he's also doing some voiceover work, which sometimes allows him to do a little bit of singing with that, and people are obviously very impressed with his range. And Peter is still singing bass, not as much, but, you know, just around here. They don't do it professionally any longer, unfortunately. But then I get my own concerts here in the house, so that's good.
Well, they are you have some very, very talented young men. Ladies and gentlemen, if you go and look on YouTube under the Keller Brothers and listen to those young men sing, it will give you chills.
Because they did all right. I mean, they got to round 2 of America's Got Talent, so can't do much better than that.
No.
And, even when they did get to round 2, the fact that they were turned down was not that they were poor. They just said, this is not the venue for you. Because I guess they couldn't see them being up on a Las Vegas stage. I mean, there's not too much glitz about them. They're good young men, good, solid guys. And they couldn't see them, you know, parading across a Las Vegas stage. So I guess that's why they turned them down.
I bet they would have surprised the audience would have been on their feet. So, sucks with the show, because they shot themselves in the foot for sure.
Yeah, I think so. Yep, unfortunately. Oh, well. Things go on.
Yeah, life does. Now, there were 2 books that you wrote. I think I have them. I know I have the one I'm going to read out of. But one of them was called Vortex of Revelation, The Last Days. One was called Vortex of Revelation, The Second Coming. we don't talk about those books much because you also do a lot of romance. And these books were written back in the day. Tell the folks about those two books because those are some very interesting books.
Well, Vortex of Revelation, The Last Days, and then the sequel to it, The Second Coming, those actually got their start when we were still living out in Portland, Oregon. And this was before, that was before the whole, the Revelation and all of the Last Days and the Second Coming of Christ and all of that, all of the hubbub came to be. And I kept having these visions during the night, and I would write down my dreams. I always keep a pen and paper right beside my bed, so I'd write down what I was thinking of or what I envisioned, and then I would type it up. And lo and behold, Yvonne, a couple days after I would have those dreams, I would write them down and then finally type them into the computer, something similar to that would actually happen in real life. And it kept occurring, and that shocked the heck out of me. So finally we decided we're just going to publish this and see. And it didn't get much of a blip at all as far as the book goes. However, it did get quite a bit of interest from Hollywood, which is very nice to know. I don't know if you
really? No.
Yeah.
Inquiring minds want to know. Do tell. It's just you and I talking. Do tell.
Okay. Well, we got we got all sorts of people involved from Hollywood, local talent here. We actually did some filming of a trailer to get some interest drummed up for it. It would be kind of an indie film to begin with. So we had some contacts out in Hollywood that were more for the background team. And whenever we would go to anybody with a little bit higher, like a producer or a director or something like that, they had an awful lot of people in front of them, so we couldn't really reach them. We did, however, reach an assistant for Joel Schumacher, and he said that he would be willing to take a look at Vortex if we could maybe wait for about 6 to 8 years. And at that time,
dead by then.
But that was at that time, and we talked over, my husband and I. We were still married at that time, and he said, "Well, this is going to pop, soon. We need to have it sooner than that."
Mm-hmm.
And discussed it, and we said, "Well, we'll see if we can find somebody else who can do a little bit sooner." Looking back at that now, we should have said, "Oh my gosh, yes, anytime you want to do it, fine." But we didn't. We said no. We'll try to find someone else. And unfortunately, we could not find anybody with high qualifications like that out in Hollywood. And it just slowly fizzled. But it is a very good story. There's no doubt about it. It's all about the last days, what on earth, what they will be like, and then the second coming of Christ and how all of that will occur.
Well, when you think about it, Anne, there have been similar shows already out there that talk about that thing. Now, I don't know why he wanted to wait 6 to 8 years, because they started coming out about the time this book did.
Yes, that is correct. And that's why we decided that we wanted to have it sooner rather than later. I mean, we should have just said, if you want to do it, fine, take it, we're good. But we did not. And it was a, decision as a team, and they said no. So looking back, hindsight, we should have said, yeah, anytime.
So what were some of the things?
One of those
that...
things, hindsight's second 2020, and you regret some of the choices that you make. But
what were some of the things that you saw that you wrote about?
Well, some of the things that I envisioned was actually seeing a difference in time. For example, in Egypt, I would see a modern day fisherman who is out on the Nile, just doing his normal thing, and he's fishing for some of the big fish there in the Nile River. And as he is fishing, he sees coming out of the morning mist Pharaoh's ship being rowed by dozens and dozens of slaves. Now, this cannot be. It's a difference in time. This can't be occurring at the same occasion. And yet it did. There was a collision with modern-day boating and also the Pharaoh's pleasure barge, and the ship sank, and he was struggling desperately to reach some of the slaves who were chained to their oars and chained to their position, and they were going down under the water, and he could not save them. And he was just frantic to see what he could do, and he couldn't save everybody who was drowning. So it was very, very traumatic. I also saw Megiddo, the area of Megiddo, where the whole Second Coming is supposed to occur. And I envisioned that there would be some bad people on the side of the devil who would be working on his side and would prevent the people from stopping the last days from occurring and from everything coming to pass in a very, very negative way. So this was just the Megiddo area is, oh gosh, I'm going so far back in history, I hardly think about this anymore. But that area is basically in the shape of a bowl. So you have a large ridge that surrounds the area, and then there's a valley underneath. So when you collect all of the forces, the mercenaries throughout time, all of them, both good and evil, all coming to this one place to have it out, it's like a collection, a hotbed of activity. And there is going to be an end to this, and it's not going to be pretty one way or the other. It's going to be violent. It's going to be impressive. And the skies are also angry as well. And the whole heartbeat of this story picks up at a very, very frantic pace, and you are perched on the edge of your seat, hoping for the good, fearing the bad, and waiting for the final inevitable outcome.
So, ladies and gentlemen,
good couple of books.
if you haven't gone and checked out Ann's books, no, you cannot go now. You have to wait till after the show. I recommend The Vortex, The Last Days, and The Vortex of Revelation, The Second Coming. If nothing but a lot of educational purposes, because if I know Ann did her homework. And
I did.
You're going to find a lot of history in those books. Would that be
correct,
Ann?
That would be correct. And it's also got a twist on some of the Revelation stories, and that is that we are saved by the most common of men. Just an everyday bunch of team. They're actually kind of like small-time Ghostbusters. They start off in Gettysburg, and where some of the soldiers have actually come back and are kind of morphing in and out of being in existence and being ghosts. And they are enlisted by some of the national factions around the world to come and help because they don't understand what's happening. And the living and the dead are existing in the same plane. This completely messes up our concept of what reality is. And yet they can't stop it, and they don't understand how to prevent horrible disasters and things that have happened in the past, ships sinking and things like that. So, yes, there are quite a few pieces of history in there, events that actually occurred. And at the time when I saw them in my head, I knew nothing about them. And then I started doing some research. What was this ship? Did it really exist? And lo and behold, I found out that it did. How did I know that? I don't know. It just came to me.
Because I would say that from one who has certain gifts, one understands someone else who has those gifts. And people may scoff at us and say, oh, no,
yeah.
you just imagined it. No, ladies and gentlemen, we actually see things. I can sit down with a complete stranger and tell that stranger everything about themselves in about 5 minutes, and they look at me like I've lost my mind.
Sometimes it's a certain type of person, or you pick it up from their body language. You can just kind of read them. I suppose it could be something like that. I mean, somebody could say that it's simply that. But when you have a little bit of Indian blood in you and are Scottish as well.
We had this gift.
Being Scottish, goes a little bit beyond that.
Because we actually, and as an empath, I can be in a room full of people and within 5 minutes be exhausted. Because whatever energy those people.
Of impressions,
yeah, whatever energy they're putting out, whether it's good or bad, it's like a collision course around me, and I have to go find a corner and sit down because I am totally exhausted from all the energy in the room.
I can believe it.
So yeah, ladies and gentlemen, before you discount mine and Ann's gifts/curses because it is mostly a blessing and a curse. And this is what I tell my mother. She'll say, Yvonne, I don't like this. I said, well, mother, you know, it's a blessing and a curse. Embrace it because this is who we are. And she said, I don't like this. I said, you can't fight it because when you fight it, it makes you even more tired. So just hang with it and just go with it.
That's true. Yeah. It's like those people who investigate crime scenes, you know, and then they envision how all of it occurred and trying to stop it from coming into their heads is probably
you can't
not
stop
a good
it.
Thing.
And this is the person that writes true crimes, right?
Yes, true.
So by the time I'm done with the 4 books I'm working on, y'all can just throw dirt in my face till I come back conscious.
You're working on 4 right now? Oh my goodness.
Yes.
Okay.
And there's 2 more people that have contacted me that said, Yvonne, please tell my story. I can't tell them no. I can't because, you know, I've always said that the victims tell the story. The victims come to me when they want their story heard. They find me. And lo and behold, they're crawling out of the woodwork.
Right. I'll be darned. Huh.
Yeah. So, Ann, I'm going to need your positive energy for the next 30 years.
I guess so. Wow. Okay. You got it.
All right. See, ladies and gentlemen, how this works. We have this tight-knit community. So when I need somebody's energy, they just give it to me. They don't care.
I got your back. Don't worry about it.
Exactly. So you wrote another book that I have that the cover is just absolutely stunning. And the lady that does both of our covers, all we have to do is just give her a snippet of our book and say, here, take it and run with it. And she does. Her name is Debbie DeSantis. And she is one of the best cover artists out there. She has never failed either Ann or myself with her cover art. And our covers pop, ladies and gentlemen. And Ann will tell you, right, if it's not a good cover, you're not going to pick up the book, right?
You're not going to sell a book. Nope. Covers and reviews sell books. Yep.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
More covers than reviews, because I've read books that had bad reviews, and I love the book, so I don't pay attention to reviews. I really don't. It's like movies.
You don't, but I think a lot of people do. But anyway, the cover, I think, is the first thing that catches your eye. Yeah.
Jack and I wanted to go see a movie, and he can't, and I forgot what the movie was. He says, Yvonne, it's got bad reviews. I said, let's go see it.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime a movie gets bad reviews, I'm going to go see it because my perspective.
And was it good or bad?
Oh, it was fall down funny. We loved it.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
It was hysterical. I draw my own contusions. I'm a big girl.
Contusions?
Yeah. I knew you'd catch that.
You're funny.
The name of this book, ladies and gentlemen, is Crenellations, and it is a collection of Anne's poetry. Anne writes some of the most beautiful poetry I've ever read in my life. Now, talking about telling a story with words and prose and poetry, y'all all know Poe is my all-time favorite because I can relate to Poe. Anne is on that same plane. Because,
oh,
Anne, yes, you are. Because what you do, Anne, is you can take words and put them in prose and poetry, and I see a picture. So let me just explain this to ladies and gentlemen. There's a lot of explaining to do here. The name of the poem in this book is called Veterans Day. And those of y'all that have followed me both here and on Facebook and my social media know how I feel about veterans and how I feel about our military personnel. They are our gatekeepers. I have had family in military for centuries. My granddaughter is going into the Army after this year, which is her senior year. So I am very pro-military. I love my military. So the name of this poem is called Veterans Day, and it goes like this. I have lived long, yet not long enough, to encounter all of those honored sites where so many men and women have fallen. But I feel their presence acutely, and I remember. Standing ankle deep amid the cool, wet grass in Gettysburg, I have envisioned the surging infantry and the galloping cavalry. I have heard the roar of battle and the staccato pop of rifles, whose echoes ring clearly through the mist of time. In this place where North and South met, where brother fought brother in a cause in which they believed, where freedom trembled and these peaceful fields were forever transformed, I feel the heavy yoke of sadness upon my shoulders for those who made the ultimate sacrifice so many years ago. Where the Indians and bison once roamed in abundance and the hawk still flies high in a clear blue sky, I have come to the place called Little Bighorn, where Custer made his last stand. Here brash impulsiveness met coordination, consumption did battle with honored balance, and brave men fell on both sides as my brothers made certain the great white father in Washington would hear them at last. It is a grim statement indeed that the American West was settled with a sledgehammer than with an outstretched hand, a hand the Indians once accepted in friendship before sadly turning away. I have stood upon the heights of Normandy near St. Miraglice, France, staring down at the now peaceful benches, with the cement from a German bunker abrading my fingers, and cringed as these great guns once more spewed their veil of death upon so many brave men. In my mind, I can see them once more, sons and brothers, an uncle who is only remembered by a faded dog-eared portrait, a father who never got the chance to say goodbye to his children, a sweetheart whose heartfelt proposal was quickly followed by a sad telegram, by the arrival of two officers bearing their grim tidings of his death upon these shores. The rolling French countryside is studded with the white crosses of the fallen, castles and manor houses that have stood for centuries and are pockmarked by mortar shells and cannonballs, the grim proof of the ravages of battle. I have never been to Pearl Harbor, Vietnam, the Middle East, and so many other places where our gallant young men and women fought and died in defense of their country. But I have read and listened to the voices of those who have returned. What would it have been like to begin a calm Sunday morning, December 7th, 1941, a day devoted to peace in the lush paradise of Hawaii, only to be jolted by the torpedoes and machine guns of war? By the hundreds, by the thousands, our brave young men and women fought and died in the sweaty, steaming jungles of Vietnam, where the perils of nature made living intolerable, and factions of both sides experimented with new killing devices beneath the heavy beat of helicopters and the rush of passing planes. And when those few survivors returned to be welcomed home, we turned away from their maimed and broken bodies, turned deaf ears to their nightmares, and honored them not. The sand, the unending sand, sea of sand, penetrates men and machines alike, and the blistering spotlight of the sun saps the strength of those unaccustomed to this fierce opponent in Desert Storm and in our battle with Iraq. In our willingness to help others reach democracy and freedom, we often confront a way of life that has survived for centuries in the Middle East and elsewhere. At times, the human cost seems too great a debt to pay. Yet, how can we turn in ignorance from those who ask for our help? Is that not one of our greatest, finest qualities as human beings? I went to Gettysburg, Anne, and I'm going to tell you, as I walked through Gettysburg taking the pictures that I took, that empath part of me became so sad because I felt those souls.
I did too. I definitely did too.
And it comes through in the
kind of a pall that hangs over it. Yeah.
Yes. And that is what comes through in this poem. You feel the battles. You feel the death. You feel the roar of cannons and the spatter of guns and the zing of arrows and the pounding of horses' hooves and the helicopter, the whoop whoop of helicopters. You know, Vietnam was our war. That was our generation. And we turned our backs on those people.
Yep, I know.
Never again. I know. Yeah. Never again. Never again. Because they should be honored. Because that was during a time when we had the draft. They didn't ask to join. They were told to join.
Exactly.
And we turned our lives on. We turned our backs. So, ladies and gentlemen, go and get Crenellations. If it's just for this poem alone, and read it every single day of your life. And honor our military, because they are our gatekeepers. Without them, well, we all know what would happen. It would not be pretty.
Nope. Armageddon. All as vulnerable as Twinkies.
Exactly. Armageddon would set in a hurry. Then you did this one, which I'm sitting here reading it. I'm going, where is she going with this? Where is she going? It's amazing.
Okay.
It's called, ladies and gentlemen, it's called Esme's Vision. It was merely a simple crofter's hut with four low walls and a sloping thatch roof with a chimney that smoked almost all year long. Of that, I can give you much proof. Here a girl was born to a poor couple and her beauty doubled each day. She was sweet and kind as a gentle doe that frolics in the glen while it may. Her hair was gold as a ripe wheat field, her eyes as blue as a summer sky. Her lips were as red as two rose petals, kissed by dew as the new day draws nigh. When good Esme had grown to a woman, eager lads came from far and near. Seeking to win her, they dazzled and fought, hoping a victor would be made clear. Still Esme ignored them completely, passed over their masculine pride, each costly raiment, cap, and bright cloak, sword or dagger, glistening at their sides. One day, she spied an old beggar, garbed in tattered tunic and hose. His face was awash in dark whiskers, and there was a hook upon his sharp nose. As Esme drew near, she saw he was blind. His eyes remained fixed and quite steady. He knew her not from a fishmonger's wife or a shepherdess crook at the ready. He reeked like the swamp on a hot summer's day, and most turned away quickly fled. From the sight and the stench of this beggar, they ran until their faces were red. But Esme saw not his horrible state, her eyes filled with compassion and love. For though she was poor, he was much worse than she, so she came to him at the sight of yon grove. She spoke to him softly as doves do, and brought him soup in great bowls, while the villagers mocked every kindness like a giant troop of hideous trolls. When he became ill, she took him inside and nursed him throughout day and night. As the rain coursed down till the villagers left, all was finally serene and put right. And when he was whole, the whiskers were gone, the beggar clipped his hair, dove into the pool, he burned his rags in a bonfire, declaring to all that he was no fool. For a prince hid inside that shell of a being, that disgusting, repugnant old man, and the villagers gasped at his handsome face, costly clothes, laces delicate as a white fan. Poor Esme was speechless with wonder, quickly kneeling upon the cold ground. But the prince took her hand, gazing into her eyes, declaring to all within his command, I claim you as mine, sweet gentle Esme, bride of my heart this very day. You saw me when I was but a beggar, and for that you shall be blessed in every way. So see with your heart, do not stumble over what your mere eyes may discern, for the treasure inside may surprise you, worth every sacrifice you earn. That poem tells so many lessons.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad you like it.
Now, tell me, what made you write that one first? What was the inspiration?
For Esme?
Yes.
I think it comes from my own background. When I was younger, I was made fun of a lot. I was not exactly beautiful. To this day, I don't trust, quote, pretty. Pretty hurts. The cheerleaders who look fantastic and, you know, are so physically endowed and good at everything and all that used to make an awful lot of fun of me. I was short. I was chunky. I was intelligent. I wore glasses. I had very pale features and frizzy red hair, and I was not exactly the belle of the ball. So I guess it was a cry for me to the world, look beyond what you see, look a little deeper, and maybe you'll see me.
And that is so true, because, ladies and gentlemen, Anne is one of the most beautiful people I know. And I don't say that lightly. She is beautiful. And the reason Anne is beautiful, because her laughter is contagious. Her eyes sparkle. Yes, it is. Her smile would light up a darkened room on any day. She's Scottish, which is close to me little heart, because I also am from... We have that in common. We are Scotch-Irish.
Very good.
She is not only intelligent with common sense, but she has an intellect that I would die for. Almost envious, not really.
You do pretty well yourself, madam. Come on now.
but you make me aspire to do better, my darling.
Oh, well, thanks.
And what her poem was saying is, we are so quick to see people in a one-dimensional view that we don't see the entire person. And beauty comes not from without, ladies and gentlemen. Some of the most beautiful people that I know, Anne excluded, are ugly on the inside. They are rotten and dead on the inside. There's nothing left but a shell. Beauty has to come from within oneself. And when that beauty comes out, it does not matter the height, the weight, the hair color, the glasses, the curl.
Right.
It doesn't matter, because this person is absolutely gorgeous. So all the negative things that Anne said about herself, ignore all that. Because this is one beautiful woman, and I mean that from the bottom of my heart.
Boy, you're doing my ego a world of good here.
I only speak the facts, ma'am. You know that. I call it like it is. If you're a jackass,
well,
I'll say you're a jackass. You are welcome.
Thank you.
But not only did Esme see some... My mother has this saying. I used to complain that I had no shoes until I saw the man with no feet. So the second lesson in this poem is, although Esme was poor, she saw someone who was even more poor, so she shared what she had.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So, ladies and gentlemen, what the purpose of these two points, I know it was heavy tonight, but we laughed along the way, is... be accepting of yourself, for one thing. What other people think about you, it's not on you, it's on them. And as a friend of mine, Taylor Dawn, likes to say, we are born to stand out. We're not born to be part of the herd. I can't talk anymore. So if you have flaming red hair that's in beautiful curls that I always wanted, the natural curly flaming red hair, you got it. I'm going to talk to God about this.
And I always wanted something different. Isn't that true, though? We always want something that we don't have.
It is.
You know?
Until we just learn to say, well, this is the package I got. I got to deal with it.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I tried so hard to have straight hair, and I was even thinking about coloring it when I was about, oh, gosh, how old was I? I was maybe 13, 14, something like that. And I was trying desperately to have brown hair in a page boy. I thought that people would like me if I had that kind of hair. So I went to, we lived in Michigan at the time, so I went to the Ferris State College Beauty School. And you got to be a free victim to the ladies who were going through the beauty classes and trying to get their certification. So, all right, fine. So Annie went in there, and I got my hair straightened, and I was going to have it colored. So the first part was the straightening. You're supposed to use about a quarter of one of these bottles to straighten someone's hair. Mine was so darn curly, they used two bottles on my head.
Oh, my word.
And the lady who was doing it went to her professor and said, something is desperately wrong because I've used enough on her and it's just not getting straight. What do I do? So the professor came over and said, well, how much did you put on? And she said, that, a quarter bottle, right? No, both bottles. Oh, my gosh. My head was very, very hot. It felt like I was on fire, like somebody had built a campfire on the top of my skull. So she raced me over to the sinks, and she's rinsing it out at the speed of sound. And she asked me if I was okay, and I said, well, yeah, my head's really, really hot. And she said, well, it's very red. Let us, you know, see if you can recover. And I guess I looked okay, and that night I got my page boy. It was still red, but they didn't want to do anything else to me because they had kind of pushed my hair to the limit. So we would have to do the dyeing later on. Okay, fine. But I was divided. I had red hair, but it was in a page boy. I was so happy. I went home and went to bed, and that night there was a thunderstorm. Our German Shepherd dog had gotten out and was heading toward the road, so I went out to grab him and bring him back in. And, of course, I got right in the middle of what must be one of those microbursts. I was soaked to the skin. Every single piece of me was dripping wet, including, of course, my hair. So I went back inside, and I'm drying off in the bathroom, and I look up, and my hair is doing the two-step everywhere. It puffed up like an afro. Despite two bottles of that straightener, I couldn't believe it. It was actually damaged, and I had to let it grow out for several years, and then I finally chopped it off, and then finally I had something I could work with again. I used to have multiple rubber bands in my hair, tying it down because it was literally puffy everywhere and about 6 inches long at that time. And I looked ridiculous. I mean, I was ridiculous enough as it was, but now it was really, really bad. So, wow. In trying to make myself look gorgeous, I almost lost my hair completely. It's a miracle that it stayed in. So there you go. Perfect example. Wow.
And like I said before, God has a very wicked sense of humor. You're supposed to have that beautiful, curly, red hair.
I guess so. Boy, did I learn my lesson. Never again. Never, ever again. And I do not go near a beauty parlor. I have heard people say, oh, I would love to get my hands on your... Uh-uh. No, no.
Not happening.
Enough for me.
But see, ladies, and this is what Ann and I are saying. In order to get... For lack of a better statement, in order for people to like you, you first must like yourself. And we are our own worst enemy on so many levels. I spent so many years trying to be this person for person B, this person for person C, this person for person D. And I kept trying to fit in all these factions. And somewhere along the line, I lost me. And my husband told me, he says, Yvonne, one of the first things that I ever popped in my head about you, and he's known me all of my life, is you were such a free spirit and so effervescent. I said, well, I lost all of that. He said, no, you haven't. No, you haven't.
The fizz went out of the bottle, huh? No, you have it all. I agree.
No, I am still a free spirit and effervescent, and if people don't like it, I really don't care. What you said.
I understand that completely. Completely.
And I am so glad that you're there too, because it makes me happy that we've come to that place in our lives that it really doesn't matter what other people think.
No.
Because if they can't accept us, we accept them. But if they can't accept us, boy, are they missing out.
I just go ahead anyway. You know, it's okay. I mean, they can believe what they wish, and I guess it took me quite a while to realize I don't have to fix myself.
No.
Or everyone else.
No.
And it is a maturing process. You just have to get there. You can't tell someone, can you?
And what's so funny? Now think about this. Think about all those little cheerleaders that made fun of you and teased you because you didn't look like them. Well, they're probably overweight, married to a husband that, well, less than stellar.
Uses them.
Yeah, has all these children running around that don't behave. Not that being overweight is a problem, but they're not the skinny cheerleader
right.
that they were before. They have completely lost that persona of beauty as they've aged. Now, no, I don't weigh 89 pounds anymore, but I don't weigh 300 either, because that's not who I am.
Right.
I didn't eat myself into oblivion as I got older. Number one, I can't stand food, but that's beside the point. My happiness is not in food.
Boy, part of my happiness is in food. I'm going to counter you on that one.
Food does not make me happy.
Give me some chocolate and coffee any day. I'm good.
Well, now coffee makes me happy. My children would not even speak to me in the mornings until they handed me coffee. And when they handed me that cup of coffee, I'd look at them and roll my eyes and say, "What do you want?"
Oh my.
And they say, Mama, I love you. I say, "What do you want?" "No, Mama, I love you. Here's your car." "Yeah, what do you want?"
Yeah, "Mama, I love you" means you want something. Okay. All right, fine.
So, ladies and gentlemen, yes, Ann and I have reached the point in our lives that here we are. Love us like we are, or like us like we are. We don't care if you don't, because we ain't changing for nobody, right?
That's right.
And
I'm really intrigued with your Australian audience and the size of it. That's really, really neat. You know, that's one
Isn't
place I've
neat?
Never gone.
It's
I always wanted to go there, and I really, really wanted to see it. I think it's fantastic. I read all these books set in Australia, and I just eat it up. I've just never been there.
Well,
I wish I
put
could.
It on your bucket list and go.
Yeah, I probably should. I really should.
Yeah.
It's going to be quite an endeavor. I mean, it costs a lot just to fly over there, but I'm intrigued. I'm really, really intrigued. I would like to see it someday. Yeah.
And what do I say? Don't live your life with regret, so at the end of your days when you're on your deathbed, you're saying, "I shoulda, woulda, coulda."
Yep. You're right.
So
yeah,
save your nickels and dimes. Yep.
And
put it up at the top. Yep, there you go. No, Yoda says do or do not. There is no try.
Okay, Star Wars aficionado.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it's that kind of night on Off the Chain. If y'all seen the banner on the program, I have completely changed it. It will be tweaked some more, but I have chains on there now, and it says Off the Chain in big red letters. The chains are broken.
Okay.
Yeah, when you see it, you'll know. Now, ladies and gentlemen, Anne's got a new book out. She's got 15, 16, 20 books out. I lost count. But she's got a new one out, and another one is coming out in a couple of months. So the one she's got out is called Secret Yearning. Where is that one set, real quick?
Secret Yearning is out on Amazon.com right now. It's number 28 of the books that I have out there. So you can get it on Amazon.com, and it's also out on Smashwords. You can find it there as well.
And then
it should be on Lulu.com in a couple of days, because I'm still fixing that version. But yeah.
All right. And also, she's got one coming out called All That Glitters, and me and my smart-ass mouth said, "Is not always gold," and she fell off the chair before we ever went live.
I think everybody will go there. I think they will suppose that. Yeah, they'll add add the rest in.
So, ladies and gentlemen, watch for that. Now, Ann, you're coming back after the first of the year. You realize that, right?
Okay. Cool.
See,
awesome.
See how, I'm thinking March because you'll have a few more books out by then.
Yep, hope so.
Okay. See what I do, ladies and gentlemen.
Yep.
Yeah, what I do is the people like Ann that I've known forever, I just put them down on a date and I send them a note and say, oh, by the way, you're on the show this month. And they go, oh, didn't realize it. Okay.
Yeah, or like I did for this, I said, yipes, I didn't know that. Oh, my. Okay.
Yeah, she didn't know until I put it up and said, yeah, and guess what? You're a guest on the show. But I'm kind of that way. Yeah, they understand that about me. That's one of the things they love.
It's okay. It's okay. I'm good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Because we have fun. So now we're like fixing to run out of time. So tell the folks where you can be found.
And the hour flew. You're right. It always flies.
Yeah, always flies. Yes. So tell the folks where you can be founded.
Founded? I can be found on Amazon.com, all over the place. Just put in Ann B. Keller or Ann Keller, and you'll pull up a slew of books and more genres than you can shake a stick at. I'm on Smashwords as well, and I'm also on Lulu.com if you like hardcover books like I do, and you just want to, you know, take it on the bus with you. They have quite a few of my books as well.
And she also, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you who are movie producers or directors or indie movie producers or directors, she wrote a screenplay for me with the Tangled Minds book. And I'm going to tell you, it is one killer screenplay. So, yeah, hook up with Ann and let's make this a movie because it is one killer book and screenplay. I'm telling you. When she tells me I write like Steinbeck. Yeah. Yeah, when she tells me I write like Steinbeck, I want to hug her. So there you go.
You do.
You're such a mess. I love you for it. Tomorrow night, ladies and gentlemen, for our Saturday night show, we will have author Linda DeLeon. She is the first time on this show at 8 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time. She is into all things vampire, so this should be fun. She was born in... Yeah, you got to listen in. She was born in Richland Parish, Louisiana, raised in Vicksburg, Mississippi, and now she lives in Dallas with her husband. So she is a Southern girl, born, bred, raised, reared, and still living. Got to love her. And she's into, she has written two books, Fall into Darkness and Veil of Time. So that should be really, really interesting. She also does, yeah. She also did some short stories, which are available in Anthology Southern Haunts, Volumes 2 and 3.
Okay.
Now, very. So you got to listen in. And you call in if you want to and help co-host the show if you want to. See how I just throw that in there? Okay.
Yeah.
We'll see. Mm-hmm. You just won't be able to stand it. You'll have to. As with all things at the end of the show, ladies and gentlemen, Ann and I have been serious. We've laughed and we've almost come to tears because this is off the chain and we talk about anything and everything because it matters. And one of the things that I say at the end of the show is I thank Ann for being here because I absolutely love her and the hour flies by. And I say, don't just feel special, be special. Because if you just feel special, you'll never be special. So when you wake up every day and you look in the mirror and you're brushing your teeth and combing your hair, you say, I am special. Don't say, I feel special today. You say, I am special. You're going to see a difference. And if you want to achieve greatness, ladies and gentlemen, don't ask permission because nobody's going to give it to you. They're going to tell you no because people like to drag you down into their mire of self-pity, discontent, and self-absorption. Don't go there.
Yep.
You want to be ahead of the herd. You want to lead that pack because you don't see anything if you're not leading the pack. The scenery never changes, ladies and gentlemen, if you don't lead that pack. Trust me.
Yep.
And then I say, your smile is your logo. Your personality is your business card. And how you leave others feeling after having an experience with you, ladies and gentlemen, that is your business card. So join us tomorrow night at 8 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time on Off the Chain with me, your host, Yvonne Mason, and Miss Ann B. Keller and I say good night.
Good night. Thank you.
You're welcome. Hang on. Now, we're, of course, in the archives, which everything we say will go up in archives, but I wanted to tell you how much I love and appreciate you, and thank you for a wonderful, wonderful hour. It was so much fun.
Thank you. Thank you. It was fun. Thanks a lot.
It made you laugh.
I know. We did.
Yes,
we always laughed.
We always do. And of course, when this thing goes up in a little bit, I'm going to tag you in it when I post it. And then when I put it up tomorrow on all the podcasts, I'll tag you in it and repost
okay.
it and put it everywhere and tell folks to go listen at it. And let's sell crenellations in the vortex. And
that would be nice. Yeah, it's been a long time. Yeah, those books don't get any sales these days. Yeah, people don't even know that they're there. Huh.
Well, guess what? We're going to wake them up. They do now. So, my darling, I will let you get back to your evening. Thank you again so much for being
You're
my
welcome.
Friend and for
and
joining
for
me tonight. And
really
I will
it.
Put you down. You're welcome. Surprised that it was.
Sometime in March, huh? Okay.
Yeah, and I'll send you the date. I won't surprise you this time. I'll get back to my
desk. Yeah, please don't surprise me. It's been a heck of a week at work. So.
Yeah, but just think about this. Now you feel all better.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. It's much better now than I did before.
So, you needed this tonight.
I did. Yeah, I needed the stress relief. Thank you, Bun.
You're welcome, my darling. So I will get this up and I'll give you the dates and you put it on your calendar and we'll plan for March. We'll keep promoting Crenellations and Vortex.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right, sweetheart. Talk
All
to
right.
you later.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night.